This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there, this is Matt Ligeti, your favorite comic book Yeti. Did you know that if enough people listen to this podcast, advertisers give us money? Money we can then use to, say, pay our journalists. It's wild. Totally unrelated, we make this podcast using Anchor by Spotify. If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need. All in one place. Even Grant can do it, and he's a grandpa when it comes to technology. Love you, Grant. Let me fill you in on what some of us in the industry call reasons to believe. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. And they make it super easy. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. And best of all, Anchor's totally free, which is great when you're, say, a comic book journalism website who lives on donations and boyish charm. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. That's anchor.fm. And hey, I love you.
You are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Hello, I'm Grant, and you're a listener, thank you. And today we have one of my favorite people. You may know her for her work on Commander Rao, which is, by the time this airs, it will be currently in stores. Yeah, in the Scout online store. Probably around the third printing, I'd say, at this point.
Yeah. I
hope so. it's Fellhound. Hello, Fel. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me. I am so stoked to be here with the Heartthrob Grant.
Like... That's what I keep telling people.
True.
I know this is not a visual medium, but it rings especially true because we are both in onesies. Fella has on a bat onesie. It has wings and a bow tie. And I've got on a Chewbacca onesie with a pocket that doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, we are comfortable. Mm-hmm. We gotta be dressed for the best for a podcast. Even though you can't see us, but...
Visual medium. I think we need to work. We need to get a public access show next.
Right? Or like, just have like, just like when you post the podcast up, just have like pictures.
Ooh, you know what? Do you want an executive producer credit?
I mean, I like the sound of executive. I've never been an executive before.
Hot dang.
Yeah.
So number one, we're going to switch gears. I just want to say, how did you come up with your pen name? Because I'm privy to your real name, and I think that's hilarious that I know this real name, and a lot of people don't.
Secrets. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. So where did Fellhound come from?
Yeah, so Fell is actually... and named after a character from a video game called Planescape Torment. I don't remember the specifics, but there was this character, and they belong to this race of people that are supposed to float above the ground. So they're always like kind of flying. But then there was this one guy whose name was Fel, because he doesn't float around. Like, he just walks around. And so he's different. And I was like, oh, that's cute. I like that. So I was like, I'm going to call myself Fel. And then at the same time, I was in college, and I was doing a course on, I think, animal exercise. And I had to do a presentation on, like, dogs and hounds and how they exercise, pretty much. So I was like, oh, well, I'm doing a lot of stuff on hounds. I'm just going to call myself Fel Hound, because it sounds cool together.
It does sound cool. It sounds like you could be a motorcycle protagonist.
See, that's the image I want to give out. Because, like, you know my real name. So you know that it sounds like a flower shop. And you put that name next to Commander Rao. It's just the funniest thing ever. So I was like, I cannot use my real name. It just ruins the fire, the badassery of everything I'm trying to achieve. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just get a pen name, and it'll be great.
See, that's a great idea. I know a lot of people with weird names, me included, wish that we had chosen cool pen names too.
I mean, it's never too late. If you want to jump into another medium, you can write under, I don't know, what's a cool name?
Rex Manley?
Yes, or like Rambo Fightmaster.
Ramble Fightmaster, I think, is the best one I've heard to date.
You should use it. Use it before someone else listens to this and takes it.
I will do that. So now that that's out of the way, Fel, where'd you grow up?
So I grew up, I tell everybody I grew up in Toronto, but my secret is that I actually grew up in a city right outside of Toronto.
Oh.
Yeah, but no one knows any of the cities outside of Toronto, so I just say Toronto. But around the GTA, yeah.
I must know
what a Markham is.
Markham.
Yeah, see?
I feel like I know it only because I've been a fan of the NHL for a while, and some player must have grown up in Markham.
Oh, yeah, we have a lot of hockey players that end up playing for the Leafs and everything, so probably.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so that's where I grew up. I was actually born in Hong Kong, but I came here when I was 3, and to be honest, I haven't visited Hong Kong in quite a bit, so I'm starting to not really remember what it's like there.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. I remember it's really hot, and the air conditioning is really cold, so it's really hard to find the right body temperature, because you're either freezing or you're, like, sweating. Food is really good, and the shopping is really nice.
So do you think you'll go back to Hong Kong at some point?
See, I really wanted to, and maybe, who knows, maybe I still might. I just feel like because, you know, the political situation in Hong Kong right now, they have this thing called, like, a national security law, where if you run your mouth accidentally and say the wrong things, they will just arrest you.
Oh, no.
I feel like I would definitely be that kind of person. So I just got to be really careful if I go back.
Yeah, well, or you could go back to Markham.
Yeah. A really nice place. I mean, you know, we have a fairly large Asian population here. A lot of people are from Hong Kong, so it's kind of like a Hong Kong light almost in Canada. Like,
oh,
we have a lot of stores, a lot of, like, Hong Kong bakeries, Hong Kong canteens and everything. So, yeah.
What's your favorite food from the Hong Kong community?
So we have these bakeries, and they have this thing called pineapple buns. I don't think they're actually made out of pineapple.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, as I see it. But it's actually, it looks like a pineapple, because it's like this like round bun, and it's like scored and it's yellow. So, but it's really sweet. There's no real pineapple in it. Don't worry. And it's like just this really, really nice kind of cross-eyed bun thing.
Is that something that, I don't know, one could hypothetically mail across borders?
I mean, possibly. I'm just scared they'll like squish it down.
Oh, and that would lose the, yeah.
Yeah, because it needs to be fluffy. But, like, I don't know if there's any Asian bakeries in Boston. There might be. If you go to any Asian bakery, you will find a pineapple bun.
I'm going to make note of that, because this does, I like the sound of something without pineapple in it, and it's trying to be pineapple.
Yes. I mean, I think it doesn't have pineapple in it. I'm pretty sure it doesn't, but
you I just don't put a single bullet in a six shooter.
Yeah, I mean, you should eat it and find out for me. Maybe they make it different in Boston.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Yes.
So what I'd like to know is, at what point during your childhood were you fascinated with the art?
So I've always kind of doodled my whole life. Like, I have sketchbooks upon sketchbooks upon sketchbooks of just my really old doodles. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just like doodling. Like, I was put into an art class really, really young with my sister as well. So then we used to, like, draw together a lot, and that was just a pastime of ours. My mom also used to be an artist. So she
really?
She had a lot of life drawing photos, and, like, I'd get her to draw things for me. Like, I had this, like, art book full of Gundams, and then I remember bringing it to my mom, being like, "Hi, Mom, can you draw me this, like, super complicated Gundam?" And she's like, "Sure." And, like, she did, and it was really, really pretty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Those are not simple.
They are not, but yeah. So, like, I don't know. I guess we've always been kind of an artsy family on my mom's side, and we just kind of got into it. My sister was actually way more into it before I was. Like, she's an actual, like, went to an illustration school, graduated, worked freelance illustration for, like, magazines and banks and everything. So, like, she's the real deal. And then for me, I didn't really get into, like, actual, I guess, serious art or, like, comic book art until much later, until I was, like, 20. And I think about that time, that was when I was, do you know the show Gargoyles?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they canceled it after second season.
Yeah. Like, just after all the Oberon and Avalon stuff.
Right? Like, it was, like, such a huge cliffhanger, because then, you know, they had such cool stuff that they were going to set up for season 3. But then I found out that they actually continued the series in the comics. So then I, like, searched the world to find these Gargoyles comics, and they're, like, stupid hard to find now.
Oh, wow.
But I finally found them, and I felt like that was the moment I kind of fell in love with comics, because, like, I traveled to so many comic book stores before I found these comics. And at that point, I got introduced to, like, so many other comics, just, like, walking around the store being like, "Oh, this looks cool, and this looks cool." And then, yeah, I think that's how I really got into actual comic book art. Just seeing that and being like, "Wow, this is so cool."
Like, what did you find out retroactively that Gundam were in manga? Did you know, like, that was a thing too?
I did. So I watched a lot of the anime growing up, because I think Gundam Wing was broadcast here in America. Or not America, the Americas.
That's North America.
Same things, yes. I actually own, I think I only have, like, one Gundam manga. I'll be honest, I wasn't really into it for the story, because I was 8, I mostly was like, "Robots! Be robots!" Yeah.
And just because Gargoyles is the best, which one is your favorite character?
So I actually really like the bad guy, Xanatos.
Really?
I think he's a very well-rounded villain. I think he's smart. He's like Lex Luthor, but I don't hate him as much as Lex Luthor. Like, he is smart, he is capable, and he's, like, not the worst. You know, he had, like, I'm trying to remember what the show happened, but I just remember that I thought he was a very complex and well-written villain.
Yeah.
And that his goals weren't entirely just evil, and that he had his own kind of way going about things. So that's what I kind of liked.
Another weird question. Do you remember the episode where Lisa Mazza turned into a gargoyle?
No, I don't. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Oh, it's on Disney Plus.
Oh, I need to rewatch it.
Yeah, you do. Because this whole question was going to be, did you think Gargoyle Elisa Mazza was attractive?
Oh my God. Okay, well, now I have to Google it. Maybe, you know what? Maybe can I Google this now?
Or... Oh, yeah. We can edit out any silence in post. This is worth it.
5 hours later.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, she just looks like Elizabeth a gargoyle, so it's not, like, a big difference to me, though. She's always pretty, don't get me wrong. But it's not, like, a massive change.
Because there was, I remember there distinctly, well, not distinctly, but now that I'm an adult, I remember hearing of people, like, having Goliath thirst. And they're like, "That guy's just a big, beefy, deep voice." And I'm like, well, you know, Elisa Mazza gargoyle, she was attractive, too.
Honestly, they're all kind of fairly attractive. Like, everybody loves Demona as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah.
They're not unattractive.
No.
Unattractive monsters.
No, he kind of looks like Iron Man. He's like Iron Man meets Lex Luthor.
You know
I'm
what?
Sure some people find that hot.
Oh, yeah. And plus, it was Jonathan Frakes did the voice. Number two from Star Trek The Next Generation.
I don't know celebrities. I'm sorry. I've seen 5 movies and I know 5 people. And I think those people are Kristen Stewart.
So let's say that they're shooting a live action Gargoyles movie and Kristen Stewart got hired to be in that movie. What character would you hope that she plays?
I mean, I guess Fox. But
then you have to see her with Xanatos.
Oh, that's true. But, like, I don't hate Xanatos. That's a thing. I like Xanatos' character. And, like, if Fox ever, you know, turned gay and got with a lady, I think Xanatos would be okay with it. You're just like, yeah.
You know what? This is the most I've ever thought about Xanatos.
I have his action figure. It's, like, literally right there. You can't see it, but it's there.
That's amazing. So from the Gargoyle comics, getting you into comics, which other ones did you read after that?
So I read Saga, and I read Batwoman Elegy, and I read Walking Dead. I also read I think those were the 3 that really got me started on the comics journey. Batwoman Elegy probably is the one that influenced me the most, given the giant poster on my wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
H. Williams doesn't mess around.
No, I was like, I had no idea a comic could look like this. Like, it was so well done. And I was like, I didn't even know that there were gay superheroes. I was like, what? So, like, just seeing that for the first time as, like, a baby gay. And I was like, oh, this is so nice. I am represented. This art looks beautiful. The story is great. And it just kind of makes you want to do something just as awesome one day.
Is that kind of what got you into wanting to do your own work?
Kind of. So I've been writing for a very long time. Like, I've been writing since grade school. And I've always liked to tell stories. But, I never really thought about making it a comic. Because back then, I couldn't draw very well. So, you know, I wrote a ton of scripts. Mm-hmm. But I never really thought about drawing them myself. I was like, okay, I'm going to write these scripts. And then I don't know what I'm going to do from here. But I'm just going to write them anyway. And I wrote a lot of short stories, but those weren't very good either.
Oh.
Yeah. But I think after seeing, like, Batwoman Elegy and all those other comic stuff, I was like, you know, I think this is a very comprehensive medium to tell stories in, because you're not stuck with either just motion pictures or just words. Like, you can combine both, and you have, like, so much leeway to do what you want. And, you know, they say picture tells 1,000 words, and I think there's some things that are better told visually than just with words alone. So then at that point I was like, okay, well, I am a broke college student. I cannot afford an artist, so I will just learn to draw and go from there.
Like, how did you start that process? Did you buy any books on how to, like, format comics, or did you get...
I didn't buy a lot of how to make comic books. I mostly bought how to draw books, because I, like, couldn't really draw that well. Like, a lot of my figures looked, like, really pudgy. Like, I had the bun hands with, like, pudgy Simpsons fingers. That was the kind of stuff I was doing. So I really needed to learn figure drawing and anatomy. And then after I kind of got some of that down, I backgrounds is something I still struggle with, to be honest. But, yeah, you know, I think, you know, I started out drawing traditionally, and then I learned a lot of, like, figure stuff from there. But then once I started doing digital work, that's when I kind of learned, you know, how to color things, how to kind of sort of draw backgrounds, or at least cheat them enough that people won't be able to know the difference, and, like, actually putting a decent looking comic together.
Yeah. What was that transition from traditional to digital like?
I've been kind of playing around drawing with a mouse on GIMP when I was still doing traditional stuff, so I had, like, some experience. I think the biggest thing is just learning how the program works. Because I use Clip Studio. it's a fantastic program, especially if you, like, know the ins and outs of it. It's so comprehensive. It is such a great program. But I think that was the biggest learning curve, just figuring out how to do everything. Yeah, and, like, there's still stuff I'm figuring out now, like, I like vector lines. I almost never use vectors, but apparently it's super useful and I should use them more, so.
What the shit is a vector line?
It's like a, so if you draw and you, like, expand it, then it won't, like, get blurry because it's a vector and it uses math to make it not blurry. That's kind of a, how you, I explain it.
No, that's wild.
Yeah, right, math.
So you made the transition from traditional to digital. You've done some writing. You've done some of your own stuff. When does Captain Fix-It come in?
So Captain Fix-It, that was from 2017. I think that was I've made a couple, like, really short comics before that, like 4 pages that looked really awful and I never showed anybody. Actually, no, I posted them on Reddit. Yeah, I was very brave back then, and I posted these, like, awful 4-page comics on Reddit, and I took them down now for...
Oh.
Yeah, but it's okay, because one of those 4-page comics is actually the basis of Project Ollie. So I'm pretty much redrawing that 4-page comic and turning it into, like, a 60-page comic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But Captain Fix-It, yeah, that was May 2017. I think that was when I kind of had a grasp on some figure drawing, and I was like, I need to learn how to just, like, compose a story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it came in, and I'll be honest, it's not, like, my best artwork I've done traditionally, because it was really made to just try and tell a story. And I wasn't really concerned about, like, everybody having, like, 2 dots for eyes and a smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think after that, that's when I kind of realized that if I had more tools at my disposal, I could do things faster and I could do things better. Because
okay.
I never learned how to color traditionally. And I just couldn't wrap my head around it. Like, markers and everything, I don't know why. I just, my head just doesn't compute in Copic markers.
Oh, yeah. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
So, because Captain Fix-It is a black and white.
Yes.
So when did you start working on Do You Believe in an Afterlife?
So that was in 2019. Literally, like, right after I made Captain Fix-It, I bought a tablet, I bought Clip Studio, and I started, like, making the jump to digital. And in 2018, I mainly focused on just learning how to use the programs and doing a lot of illustrations. I wasn't really worried about making comics. And then after I got my illustrations to a point where I felt like, okay, this is not terrible, and I could probably start focusing more on storytelling, then I think in 2019, I wanted to do still just illustrations, but illustrations that focused more on story, so like a narrative illustration. And then I made 6 of those. I posted them online, and people found them, and people was like, oh, this is so cool. Is it a comic? Is it going to be a comic? What's their story? And I was like, well, I wasn't really planning on making it a comic, but since people asked, I thought, okay, I'll just turn these 6 illustrations into a comic story thing. And that's kind of why there's, like, all these prose bits in between, because it's kind of mishmashed together from the art and the comics and just trying to fill in a story without getting ahead of myself. Yeah.
Well, the story is really solid.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. How much of plotting for that did you do?
So from the 6 illustrations, I had, like, a basic idea. I think it was mostly just filling in the dialogue that to, like, flesh everything out. That was kind of the hard part, I guess. A lot of that I kind of just wrote. Like, I just wrote banter, I just wrote, like, a ton of dialogue, and then I just kind of picked segments that worked well together, or, like, picked kind of pieces that worked well together until something of a theme came. And then, yeah, and then I just kind of plopped them in the book together, and it just kind of came together. Sorry, I know that's not a great explanation, but it was just, my process is, like, very chaotic. So, like, I'd, like, draw something, and then I'd, like, write some dialogue, and I'd draw something and write some dialogue, and then, you know, I look back on it a couple days later and was like, okay, let's see what fits together, and then just, like, put it in.
No, it's really cool to hear that, because it feels like that style of creation works well when you're working on, like, digital creation, too. Because of Clip Studio, you can, like, overlays and move stuff around, and
yeah,
I'm sorry, I just started using Clip Studio, and I'm like, oh, you can do this!
Right? Like, there's so much stuff you can do. It's it's nice. And I think it does allow for a bit of that experimentation. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't look like something, you can just move it around. And yeah, it just makes my life easier.
And when do you have time to do this?
So I only work part-time in my paramedic job. So I work a couple days, like a weekend and a couple weekdays, and then I take a couple days off. And yeah, so I kind of split my time between making money and drawing.
Making money and losing money?
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, like before I had like a pretty solid schedule. But ever since I got my injury, things have kind of slowed down a bit because I don't want to like overwork myself. So I was doing kind of 2-3 pages a week. Now I'm doing 1 page a week. But yeah,
Debbie,
trying to get back up to speed.
Have you used any of that experience as a paramedic with your creative work?
To be honest, not really. I do kind of like to keep those two jobs separate. Mm-hmm. Like, I draw so I don't have to think about work, and I work so I don't have to think about art.
And when did all the Commander Rao stuff start?
So after Do You Believe in an Afterlife, I was pretty much looking at my portfolio, and I was like, I now have this creation that is very lovely and soft and romantic and mostly features two people just staring at each other for the entire comic. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what am I missing? And I was like, oh, I don't have any like action pieces in my portfolio. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna make an action comic. And I didn't really think much about it. I was like, okay, this is gonna be a practice piece. And I was actually talking to Frankie White about it, and I was like, I think I'm just gonna make this comic and release it out for free online, and hopefully it'll get some attention. He was like, no, you should kickstart this, you need to make some money. And I was like, you know, that's a great point, I love money. So I was like, okay. So I made this pretty much, I didn't even have a script, I just kind of like outlined it, and then I thumbnailed it, and then I was like, you know, I'll think of all the dialogue after, and then I just drew it. I was like, yeah, I want to draw something that looks cool and actiony and inspired by anime stuff. And I was like, okay, let's do this.
How in the world did you plot out the knife throwing sequence?
So that, I watched a lot of like anime fight scenes. And in a lot of really cool anime fight scenes, they're always like the shot where like they throw something and it looks like it's coming at you, and like everything is very dynamic and very visceral. And from another artist, I think they go by like Banished Shadow online. They draw a lot of like Buff Lady arts, but they're like very, very cinematic arts. So I kind of studied how they were drawing like very cinematic illustrations. And I was like, okay, I combined everything together. And then I was like, I'm going to make a very cinematic shot of a very dynamic knife throw scene, which involved, I guess, like, you know, doing that. I can't remember what it's called, but that blurring effect, yeah, where like you blur something and then something looks like it's in focus. So I played around with that because I think it looks cool. And I was like, you know, I feel like there isn't really a scene like that in a lot of comics. So if I have a comic that's 90% fight scenes, why not just take my time and use like, I don't know, 2 whole pages to throw one knife.
Well, that's as wild as that. It worked out super well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I'm fairly proud of that page. And especially with Little Squid's sound effects, who just, like, made it pop. I'm like, honestly, those two pages are probably, like, the main two pages of the whole book, if I were to summarize it in 2 pages.
Let's say you go to your favorite Hong Kong bakery, you order that pineapple cake, and right when you're about to take a bite, a genie comes out. And the genie's like, hey, so, do you want to be the best artist in the world? What would you say?
Well, what's the catch?
You'd be like, oh, the catch is whenever you pet an animal, it turns inside out.
Huh. Here's the thing. I don't really pet a lot of animals in my daily life. I know it's shocking. But I feel like if I do pet an animal accidentally and have it turned inside out, that would make me feel really bad because it's probably somebody else's animal that I just like completely mangled and destroyed. So, I don't know. I feel like being best artist in the world, that's a very subjective choice. Because, like, what is best? Is it like my version of best? Is it your version of best?
Let's say It is better than Jim Lee, and on both a stylistic and economic standpoint.
You had to include the economic standpoint as
well. Yes, I did.
Yeah. Oh,
And I'll even throw this in. The animal feels no pain when it goes inside out. It just looks, the process is horrifying to watch, and it's disgusting alive? And sliming after.
Is it still alive?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is it reversible in any way?
Oh, no, it's non-reversible.
Oh, man. You know, I don't think I can do that to an animal. Yeah. Like my girlfriend loves cats, and if we ever get a cat, and don't I turn a cat inside out. Okay, some cats are nice, though. You have to be very careful about what cat you have. And, like, our cats don't shed as much.
They wouldn't shed at all if it was inside out.
Yeah, but it'd be slimy, and it'd have blood everywhere. And, like, if I feed it, does the food stay inside? Does it just plop out?
No, let's say that. I like where this is going. Let's say that in order to eat it, you have to mash up the food and, like, rub it in its stomach area.
Oh, my God. See, that sounds very involved. I don't really want to do that much work. But the cat, you just lay food out, and it just eats. You don't have to, like, rub its belly.
So what you're saying is you don't want to be the most financially successful artist in the world because your girlfriend might want a cat.
Yes. The things I do for my girlfriend.
I hope that you play this episode for her.
I will. Make sure we'll listen to it together.
Hello there. My name is Don Cardenas, and I'm here to invite you to check out my podcast, the 2021 Granty Award-winning Comics Coffee Metal, where I interview creatives in, around, and about the worlds of, you guessed it, comics, coffee, and metal. I've already had such amazing guests on my show, including, but not limited to, Liana Kangas, Mike Norton, John O'Diener, Michael Conrad, Sophie Campbell, Guitar Max Carlisle, Andrew Baina, and of course, the Word Bros themselves, Bob and Kevin. Comics Coffee Metal is available on all the major podcast services, and you can find it directly at comicscoffeemetal.com. I hope to see you there, and now I return you to Into the Comics Cave with the amazing, awesome, talented, tall, handsome, what else did I say? Definitely over 6 feet tall, smells good like lavender and motorcycle grease. Is that right? Motorcycle grease? All right. Grant Stoy. There, I said it. Get my money now.
These are 5 questions inspired by James Lipton's Inside the Actor's Studio. There are 5. I believe that you know what they are, but we're just going to go right into it. Are you ready?
Go for it. Yes.
So what is your favorite sequential art comic book sound effect?
So I really like boom, pew, pew. I know that's a very, like, kind of odd answer, but pretty much when I showed Commander Rao to my sister and I asked her what she thought of the book, her first response was boom, pew, pew. Like, that was all she texted me. And I don't know why. I just thought that was, like, such a cute answer. And I was like, oh, this summarizes my book really well. I'm going to use those 2 sound effects to, like, I just associate it with the book now. So I just think it's very cute. And I think it, like, I don't know. It has, like, it's a cute sound. It's like explosions and then pew, pew.
Yeah, it sounds like someone is firing a laser gun.
Yeah. Like, everyone loves a good pew, pew. And it doesn't even have to be like a violent pew pew. It could be like laser tag. So,
you know
what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 2, what is something about the medium of sequential art that you love?
So, I think I like that you can pretty much, like, I think you can do so much with a visual medium that you can't really do in words. Like, there's so much you can display, and there's so much kind of like conceptual and interesting and cool stuff you can do. Like, look at J.H. Williams, you know, Batwoman, and look at, like, Dave Chisholm's Canopus or Chasing the Bird. Like, I think those kind of really cool layouts where they just, it's not just sequential art, it almost looks like an illustration almost, and having that aspect still be able to tell, like, a very strong story visually, I think that's what I love about the medium, that you can just, you don't have to write things, you can just draw it and have it be very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Words are hard. Yeah.
Words are hard.
They are very hard.
Number 3, what's something about the medium of sequential art that you hate?
I mean, it did give me a repetitive strain injury, so that's probably... Yeah, it wasn't just the comics, but it was a part of it, so I guess that's the only part I don't like. It's mostly my fault because I didn't take enough breaks and I was not smart about it, but, you know, I feel like a lot of people, they do have, like, crunch and deadlines, and I think part of the industry, depending on where you go, they don't understand that art takes a really long time, mm-hmm. and sometimes that those deadlines aren't very reasonable. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And number four, what's your favorite curse word that's not actually a curse word?
I don't know. See, I try not to swear when I'm, like, in front of people. So I'm trying to think what curse words I do use.
Well, just like if again, Jack Foster said his favorite one is fudge.
I say flip, and I say duck a lot. So probably those. Or shuck. You... Or like, oh, shuck, something like that.
I would like flip and duck used in a sentence, please.
Oh, flip. Man, I can't be put on the spot like this. Words are hard. Huh.
Are words ducking hard?
Oh, flip, I dropped my duck. That's my final answer. Oh, duck, so, my flipped.
Phil, I got some bad news for you.
Oh, no.
You just died. A duck flew into your mouth and getting cut lodged in your throat.
I always knew it would end like this, but all right.
Let's say that you go to heaven and you arrive at the pearly gates, and waiting for you there is the man known as Jack Kirby, Jacob Kurtzberg, and he welcomes you. What does he say to you?
See, I don't know, because I don't actually know him that well. I'm terrible, and I'm so sorry. I know he's, like, the biggest name in comics, but, like, I don't even know what the guy looks like. I'll probably just think he's a random dude, and then he'll be like, hi, I'm Jack Kirby, and I'll be like, oh, okay, where's the food? Is there a Gates of Heaven? Do I get a celebration party?
I'm just picturing you, like, there he is. He's like, hand out, waiting to shake your hand. He's like, hi, I'm Jack Kirby. And you're like, oh, good for you. Where's
the bathroom?
I'm really hungry. Where is the food?
Like, I hate to say it, but I feel like that's how it might go. That but, like, is... you know what? I think it might take a while to settle in that he's, like, the Jack Kirby. Like, I'm sorry, I don't know people. I don't know celebrities.
You only know five people. It's okay.
Yeah, and, like, three, like I said, three of those are Kristen Stewart's. I'll ask Jack Kirby, being like, hey, have you seen Twilight?
I like this, putting him on the spot.
Yeah, roles reversed.
Fel, where can people find you on the socials?
On the socials, yes. So I am mostly available on Twitter at felhound_. But if that's too chaotic for most people, I also have an Instagram at fel.hound. And those are probably my two biggest social medias. I also have a Tumblr. And if you search felhound, it'll probably pop up. But I don't really use it that often. But I'm there if you want.
And what if people want to give you money?
So if you want to give me money, Commander Route should be released in comic book stores November 17th. And if this episode is released by the time the book is in stores, then you can ask your local comic book shop to order Commander Route. It is a very cool action one-shot, and you get a full, complete story, and it's very cool. I already said that. I just want to emphasize it.
And that's how cool it is.
44 pages for $5, so it's worth your money. And if you don't want to go to your comic book store, you can also order it right now from the Scout Web Store.
Yeah, there are retail variants available. I hope so. Actually, by the time this airs, I hope the variants are available because they're really cool.
They are very cool. Colin Tan and Jim Eros did the covers, and they are very, very cool. And everybody should throw money at the book. And
yes. Well, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you. This was so much fun. Thank you.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com or on Twitter @GrantAndStuff.